Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Friday morning. 9:13 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The Roundtable panel now in session. We have a great panel for you today. We have economic professor from Siena College, Aaron Pacetti, is here. Senior fellow, visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, former EPA regional administrator Judith Enck is here. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, shockingly here this early. Albany County District Attorney David Soares is here. And WAMC's Alan Chartock. Good morning, all.
Hey. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. That was Rosemary Armeo's
walk-on music.
Walk-on music.
I didn't hear it.
It's a theme music.
I have to go.
We're going to play it again for
okay.
you.
Well, David was here shockingly early.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, we're all here, and if you want to email us, please do panel@wamc.org as we get going on the topics. Short letters always appreciated. Long letters often, relegated to the circular file. Don't include links or attachments. Don't use abbreviations. If you can, please proofread panel@wamc.org. The Democratic presidential debate, number six, the last one for 2019, went off last night. And there was a lot of, I thought it was an interesting debate. There was a lot of hammering on Pete Buttigieg last night, which I think shows a different dynamic in the whole thing. So let's talk about that debate, and we'll start out with our political observer, Alan Chartock.
Well, from the stuff I saw in the commentators that I heard, the big winner of the night was Joe Biden, who apparently found his sea legs and was able to, be a little bit more convincing. You know, there was that point at which he injected himself, "Stop attacking me and my son," pardon me. But what he did, and I kept thinking of what a Trump-Biden debate would look like. Trump says something about his corrupt son, and then Biden turns around and lets him have it for Ivanka and what the Chinese are doing for her and all the rest of it. So, you know, I'm not so sure that Trump is going to engage in a debate if he's offered that.
Well, I think he would, because he's a vile guy who reached a new low this week attacking the longest serving member of Congress, Congressmember Dingell. Mm-hmm. So I think Trump goes right to where he perceives a weakness. I think it's unfair criticism, but at the same time, it is a problem. This narrative of Biden's son, I think, inappropriately serving on a natural gas company when he has no energy background, is going to haunt Biden if indeed he is the nominee.
Now, that's the big if here. Now, we had a debate last night. Did anybody watch last night?
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
I watched about 70% of it. And one thing that I will say, a marked difference from the huge Republican debates of the last run, everybody was... They argued, but they were all pretty friendly, mm-hmm. and there was some laughter, and it was a little lighter than the steel cage death match that was the Republican debates going into 2016. There were some funny moments. I thought Bernie Sanders at one point said, "You have used my name in vain," to Amy Klobuchar, and said, "I demand a response," and I thought it was a very funny exchange.
The best line, though, was, "I'd be the youngest woman."
Yes.
That was the best line of the night.
Absolutely. And I don't know why the networks are not, they're rerunning it a little bit, but not as much as other.
Well, what's going to stick is the wine cave with Crystal. Mm-hmm. I also looked up Hall Winery in Napa. I want my next vacation to be there.
I mean, to me, the presidential debates are theater. It has almost nothing to do with substance when it comes to the Democratic and Republican nominee. And Trump excels in presenting himself in a really positive light on stage to his supporters. I'm not saying that he is a great actor. Anybody who's watched The Apprentice knows he's an awful actor. But in terms of internalizing that theater and knowing how to respond to it, he's going to trump. God, I hate saying that word.
It's all right.
He is going to thrash any of the Democratic nominees aside from Bernie, in my opinion.
Well, I think if we go back and we just reflect on debates of years past, both form and substance has changed in order to fit the media that is currently, you know, the platform. I think, you know, when we had Walter Cronkite, you know, and people were glued to their televisions because they only had three channels, you know, on VHF and then three on UHF, you could sit there and do a more substantive engage and talk about policy and everything else. Today, you know, it's soundbite. And so how they prep is to prep with soundbites. Hey, when this person says this, you should inject this right here, because they know the following day, you know, the only thing that you're going to see repeated are those soundbites. This current format is perfect for a person who has no substance, a person who is vile, and a person who is crass.
And who knows how to present themselves in front of a camera.
Exactly.
But yet, in my viewing of this, Alan, there was a great deal of substance last night, and some of it was on climate change, some of it was on electability, some of it was on money and politics, but I thought there was a great deal talked about, and I learned quite a bit, especially about Andrew Yang, who, by the way, I didn't do a quantitative analysis of how much time everybody got. He seemed to get very little time, and I'm not sure how they worked all that out in advance. Alan, what do you think?
Well, Yang portrayed himself as a person of color, and of course he is not Caucasian, and it's not a bad, it wasn't a bad ploy, nevertheless, and I think he was pretty honest about it. You know, he is hardly black or Hispanic. I thought that was fascinating that he
Yang has done the one thing that I think Yang has done brilliantly, which is stay out of the fray, survive another day. And so that performance, I'm not sure that he was looking, you know, to be more exposed, to be out there, to be the subject of a lot of targeting. I think that he got on that stage, he achieved his goal.
So the interesting thing about this debate was that it was substantive, that you actually saw the candidates talking about serious issues that are confronting the country. Rising inequality, declining economic opportunity and mobility, stagnating wages, the environment, climate change, healthcare, education policy. That's good to see. And these are important issues that really haven't been voiced in previous intra-party debates. So it's nice to see that. Whether a substantive debate against Donald Trump, where those issues can arise, will lead to a Democratic victory is a totally different story. So independent of what I said about Trump, you know, knowing how to act in front of a camera, the positive thing about the Democratic national debate is that for a lot of people, seeing these issues brought up is an unambiguously positive development.
Well, I don't agree with you.
Surprise.
Well, you're wrong.
Hey, perfect. No, I don't agree. I think that Trump appeals to the evil base that exists in every human being, and they don't want complications of substantive debate. You know, what kind of health care, the rest of it. They just want passion. The thing that worries me about Joe Biden, really worries me, is that I can't see anybody saying, "Oh yeah, I love this guy. That's why I'm going to vote for him." You can see that with Trump, you can see that passion, but you can't see it with Biden. And while Biden remains the favorite, of overwhelming favorite of Democrats in the United States, it is puzzling to me that the Democrats may well come up with a guy who doesn't invoke passion.
Judith.
Well, I think that's true, but there are a lot of voters in the early primary states that are undecided. So I think this is still very much up for grabs. And I see all the polls involving, you know, the Biden being ahead, Bernie often in second place, and then polling on impeachment. But we just don't know what, you know, until the voters vote. I think Alan is right. There's not a lot of energy around Biden. I think there's, well, if he's the nominee, of course, I'll vote for him. But I do think One thing that struck me about last night is I do think that Bernie Sanders needs to update his talking points. It's obvious that they've been out for a long time, and I think in the new year they've got to hit the refresh button, and on this point in particular. Bernie, and I love many, many of his policies, don't mail me, don't at me.
Oh, they will anyway.
Love Bernie. Many policies. However, he sticks with, we need the largest voter turnout, you have to create energy and an excitement, and that is true, but I think so many people, particularly independents, are going to come out to vote against Trump. Yeah. And I think that's a good thing. And so I think this stage of the debate now is let's just agree it's going to be a good turnout. And so how do you define why you're different from the rest of the pack?
Well, I think the first half of the debate was really hammering Trump. I mean, that was everybody was in agreement on that. So, Alan, go ahead.
Well, which is why so many people, liked Bernie the last time. Judith, of course, I think it's always important that we identify ourselves. You have never been a Biden fan, right?
No, not true. I actually was in the Obama-Biden administration, and I liked Biden very much when he was the vice president. Yeah. But I don't think he can beat Trump. That is a big concern that I have.
I think he's the only person who can beat Trump, quite frankly.
I'm sorry, David, would you say that again?
I said Joe Biden is the only person that can beat Donald Trump. There is a reason why he is the candidate that is being specifically targeted by this president. And it has nothing more to do than the areas around the country that have that went for Trump that had in years previous had gone for Obama. The path to victory is through Ohio, it's through Pennsylvania, it's Wisconsin and Michigan. Those are the states that Biden can in fact beat Trump. There's a reason for it.
The debate last night really is going to mean nothing. It's going to change as we move into Iowa. Then everything changes and we reassess. So in a way, I feel like this is kind of like worthless blather. But we also haven't discussed race, except for that Asian American being the only person of color on that stage last night. And black voters have consistently been with Biden, and they know what they're doing. They want someone who is going to beat Trump, and that is Biden. And that's why they have not moved. And Bernie is still not appealing to minority voters. Bernie was Bernie. If you love him, and we have many listeners who do, you're going to still love him. And if you don't, if you have reservations, as I have consistently, I still have them. When he was asked a race question last night, he kept talking about climate. Not that I don't think climate is important, but that was not the question. And his comeback was simply went hell to it. Like, could we talk about the question?
That's an interesting pivot.
No, he did. He said black people.
Man, it's hot in here.
Yeah. Black people get affected by this. No. That's what he said.
I went in on this. Actually, climate change does disproportionately impact people
around
the world.
Judith.
Well, he should have.
Yeah.
But David Soares, you're the only person of color on our panel today. And, is that correct? Yes. And so I would ask you, why is there such overwhelming support for Biden from, for example, South Carolina, which is going to be a major test early on? Do you have any sense of that?
I do. And Joe Biden has a tremendous blue-collar appeal. His narrative, his entire political career has been about supporting working poor. The fact that he was also the vice president when this nation elected its first African-American president means an awful lot to people. There is a familiarity there. He was present in the most powerful position in government when an African-American was the president of the United States. And that sometimes is enough.
I look at Bernie as the inverse of Martin Luther King, where Martin Luther King put the race card first and said, class is a subset of that. I think Bernie's putting class forward and saying, well, race is a subset of that. So I don't understand why there's not larger support from minority communities for Bernie Sanders, because race and class are inextricably linked.
Race and class are inextricably linked, but you also have to understand, since the beginning since the beginning of time and African Americans in the United States, there's also been a concern about, you know, liberal Americans, right? And the fact that oftentimes, you know, the message that and the issues that are being advanced are not really being advanced by people of color. They're being advanced by people who I think are motivated correctly and want to do the best. But that is also a big concern in the minds of African Americans.
But he's got Killer Mike on his side.
Yes, Killer Mike on his side.
But what'll be really interesting is what President Obama does, if anything. He has said he's staying out of the primary, but I think it's very striking that he has not publicly endorsed his former vice president.
I don't think that's striking at all.
They worked together for 8 years.
Yes, but I also think that that's very important that as a person with a prestige that brings the kind of prestige that a former president does, that staying out of primaries is very much the appropriate thing.
Did he not do the same thing with Hillary Clinton too, as former Secretary of State? He did not get in until
after
it was
the
primary.
You know, the other thing I want to just want to touch on is, I think we sometimes gloss over how dynamic, you know, the interests and how sometimes these very dynamic interests diverge within the Democratic tent, right? Republicans, it's usually smaller government, it's anti-abortion, Supreme Court. They're focused on a smaller buffet of issues than our Democrats. Mm-hmm. And therefore, as the Democrats battle for the attention of the independent voter, who are still undecided in many places, you have to engage in more substantive discussions. And that's the reason why I think you saw last night, you know, the variety of different issues that they were engaging in.
And one of the things they talked about extensively was climate change. And we have an expert on this panel, Judith Enck, and I want to get your thoughts on some of the candidates' plans, as nebulous as some of them are, for fighting climate change. And we'll have to do that on the other side of the BBC News. Our panel today, David Soares, Aaron Pacetti, Judith Enck, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok. You, of course, can join us by emailing us, and many people have already. We will get to correspondence after the news. panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org is the email address. We will break for the BBC, and we will be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. It's 9:34. It's a Friday morning. The Roundtable panel. Some somber music here on the program, but we're all
typical holiday music.
We're all in a good mood, all the same. David Soares is here. Aaron Pacitti, Judith Enck, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok. You can join us by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. And I wanted to talk to Judith about some of the climate change fighting policies of the candidates. But you know what? This first letter we have here addresses that. So I'm just going to read the letter, and then we'll let Judith have first dibs.
Can I have an hour, please?
No, you may not.
Reserving my time.
The gentle lady will not yield.
I cede my time.
All right. This is from Adam. I'd love to hear your commentary on where you see the Democratic candidate's strengths and weaknesses as pertains to the climate crisis. It's widely recognized from a scientific perspective that this is an extinction-level threat for our species, and yet we continue to be distracted by an ineffectual impeachment and insider politics on the campaign trail. When it comes to our planet, we are really all in it together, sink or swim. How do you see this playing out? And wishing all a happy Hanukkah, warm solstice, and Merry Christmas. And that is from Adam.
Well, thank you, Adam. I, of course, think this is the most urgent issue of not only the campaign, but our generation. And we're coming on the heels of a failed United Nations convening on climate change, where the U.S. just played a really terrible role trying to beat back strong policies.
China and India, too, to be fair.
Yeah, China
and Australia.
Yeah, but really led by the U.S. delegation, it was an international embarrassment. So I think where these candidates stand is very important. I am not in the John McCain, Andrew Yang camp of all of the above. I think that is a mistake.
What do you mean?
Well, Yang and when McCain was running with Sarah Palin, remember her?
Why dredge that up right now, too?
Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
Well, because I think Sarah Palin introduced the concept of Trump to America, that you could have an unqualified
I've tried to forget that woman.
Looney Tune running for federal office. But anyway, back to climate change. I'm doing what the writer...
Mama Grizzlies are just popping up right now.
All right.
Doing what the writer is criticizing, which is going down the rabbit hole of politics. Climate change. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, by far have the best plan to combat climate change. Because they are committed to 100% renewable energy and energy efficiency, they recognize that you cannot build new fossil fuel infrastructure today that's going to last for 50 or 60 years and effectively drive down carbon emissions. They're very realistic about the fact that climate change is here. There are already climate change refugees, not only internationally, but in the United States. Remember Hurricane Maria that is still plaguing Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. People are still recovering from Katrina. Warm weather, warm ocean temperatures, water temperatures bring us more intense storms. Sandy, I could go on and on. The wildfires plaguing California, Australia. So this is a climate emergency. I don't think Biden grasps the urgency of this. His top climate advisor was also a employee or consultant for hydrofracking companies. He has since catapulted her. So I think you've got to look at the plans that they lay out. And I think Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren by far will, compared to the others, when a Democrat wins, and I do believe a Democrat is going to win, when they walk in during the new administration, they're going to know what to do right away.
What about nukes? Now, Andrew Yang was one I saw who was maybe not strongly saying, listen, we need to go this route, but he certainly said this is on the table.
Right.
And I'm not sure all the other candidates were on board with that.
Right. Well, that's why I'm not part of the Yang gang. I think that's not the only reason. I think nukes are a mistake. I think Elizabeth Warren was pretty clear in not advocating for that. We have Indian Point in our backyard. Mm-hmm. We have 9 Mile. They still have not solved what to do with all of the high-level and low-level radioactive waste. Nukes are very expensive unless there are massive federal subsidies, which there are. They're just not viable. And I think spending time promoting nuclear power wastes valuable time when we've got to move on. What are New York's indigenous energy resources? The sun, the wind,
wood,
hydro, wood in some instances.
I thought you were talking about Earth, Wind, and Fire just now.
Yeah. Do you remember?
Yeah, do you?
September.
I like that. I'm gonna start using that.
Okay.
And also, some of your listeners may have seen the New York Times piece a few days ago on the astonishing methane emissions from mm-hmm. hydrofracking.
Yes.
Methane is far more potent than carbon.
Here we go. You're going to attack my cheeseburger right now. You're going to talk about my steak?
That'll come next. We're going to get you on the Beyond Meat bandwagon by the end of the show.
Are you telling me Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren going to take away my burger?
Eat pink
slime. Is that what you're telling me?
No, they're not.
Okay.
But anyway.
Not yet, according to Judith, right?
Look at the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren plans. They're serious plans to combat the climate crisis, and they make economic sense.
And I was going to say those are the only two candidates who have a consistent economic plan to go along with their climate plan. And I don't think that's an accident, because those two are very highly related.
Yeah, I do. First of all, I think it's this coming election is perhaps the most important election if you're thinking about the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the truth. We've abdicated our leadership role, our position on planet Earth as you know, the country that has been leading the efforts and have been doing the most to promote a clean environment. The good news is that once we change leadership, there will be a restoration, I believe, of that position, and we will continue to move forward with our allies in taking this on. I also think that you're going to see, you know, a much more aggressive push by branches of our government that you wouldn't otherwise have expected. For example, our military. There are so many plans right now, reconfigurations, and having to deal
with
the environment.
Not nearly enough.
Yeah, the operative thing you said, though, David, was if you're considering environment, and who is? The Republicans have been extremely successful ignoring the whole thing. Yeah. And in the 2016 election, it wasn't even a question in a debate about it. We went through a whole election because the people who care about it are young millennials who so far have not proven their voters. So why go after it? And in this part of the country, in ours, where energy, we are rich in energy resources, as you just pointed out, this is not a big issue.
I think that you know, the successful candidate is going to be the candidate that can go to Florida and say, hey, are you wondering why you're having more storms, more volatile storms here in the last decade than you did in the decade before?
Floridians are still voting for Marco Rubio and Governor Scott, who to say, oh, red tide. There have been total disasters in Florida for the past 5 years, and you still have strong Republicans,
but look how
climate hoaxes in office.
Rosemary makes a terrific point. It has not risen to the top of issues that people care about.
I wish it would.
We all do. And frankly, it is a terribly important thing, maybe the most important thing that this world faces, right?
Yes.
But you're right in pointing out for some reason people don't give a damn and are not caring about it now. WAMC listeners care. We know that, and we know the letters. And may I, Ray, just have a point of personal privilege?
Certainly.
Did you not say in the beginning, as you always do, one letter per person, please?
Yeah.
Now we have a couple of people who sit there and just think that this is their opportunity to put themselves forward, we're going to have to do a thing where somebody does that, we won't read any of their letters.
Okay, well,
is that right?
Fair enough, and I agree with your general point, although I will say Sarah brings me the letters when you're not looking at them.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
And the thing is, I'm only seeing one per person here, so I think she is doing that filtering for us.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
So I'm saying is once you do it, you have to pay the consequences.
Okay.
And the consequences are no letters read.
Ouch.
I see the problem with climate change, and it's the same thing with economic inequality, is probably two of the biggest threats to social stability worldwide, mm-hmm. is that it's like carbon monoxide. There's not going to be one incident that convinces everybody, oh, geez, we really need to focus on the environment, or boy, we need to rethink economic policy. These are going to be really small islands that are scattered worldwide, whether it's wildfires in California or more severe storms, you know, in the Caribbean, or you name it. I don't know, but that's the problem, is that it's not on people's radars because it's not a clear and present threat. It's a little bit there.
At some point,
it's going to add up over the next 100 years to wipe out humanity.
Take gun control, for example. A class of beautiful kindergarten children is wiped out.
Was Puerto Rico.
there was certainly nothing funny about what happened. And in Connecticut, and the governor of New York, to his credit, and I don't always give him credit, but to his credit, did what he had to do. And got legislation passed, which has reacted.
I just want to say that, first of all, we call him one of his many titles that he doesn't get referred to very often on the air. Ray, I would appreciate next week that
Aaron,
that we call him the father of hotnomics. And we call him the father of hotnomics not because
Godfather,
of
please.
The weather, right?
Right.
for other reasons. But, you know, you talked about the next president of the United States having to consider the environmental impact in all of policy, right? When you talk about economic policy, you also have to consider it in foreign policy, because our refugee crisis mm-hmm. is going to continue to get worse if we don't address issues in about
and
climate.
Trump won't let people into the country.
And foreign policy is the same thing. It's not like World War III is breaking out. It's these little micro wars in Syria, North Korea's increased aggression, this, that, and the other thing.
Turkey
Venezuela.
And if you actually look at the country of Turkey, okay, you are going to see wars being waged in the Middle East because of one issue, water, and access to water.
We have to take a break, a water break, if you will. It is the roundtable panel, David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Ink, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. And we only have gotten to one letter. We'll get to many more coming up. Welcome back to the roundtable. It's 9:40. Well, coming on 9:48 now, and it's the roundtable panel with Aaron Pasitti, David Soares, Judith Ink, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. And Judith, you requested that the gentleman yield 60 seconds for your wrap-up of the climate discussion, and then we'll get back to the letters.
I'm a little bit more optimistic than this panel is on climate change, because there is an immense grassroots movement going on to tackle climate change that maybe is not visible every day, but it's resulted in most of the Democratic candidates saying they're not going to take fossil fuel campaign contributions. You have groups like the Sunrise Movement and 350, which is student-led, Al Gore's Climate Reality Project, a local group, PAWSE. I do a lot of local environmental work. There were over 60 people at the Albany County Legislature on Monday night, not only to help pass the Skip the Plastic Straw bill, which passed, thank you, County Legislature, but also to stand up against Lafarge Cement wanting to burn millions of tires every year in Ravenna. People came out because they care about air quality and climate change. It's not always evident in the media, but there is a very strong grassroots movement going on, and these people are getting very politically active.
And I agree with you, but I also think that we do a poor job of connecting these environmental issues to the people and where they're at in their experiences. Mm-hmm. People need to understand this is why we don't want, you know, single-use plastic, because this is what's happening in your community. We do a piss poor. Pasitti poor job.
Hey.
Remember your emails. Your point is a good one.
Yes.
Keep going.
Pasitti poor.
Thanks.
Check, please.
People care about the environment, and it's going to show up in the election.
Right. All right. Well, let's move on then. Thank you very much.
No, I'm just trying to help you clean this up.
One last point.
Yes.
What do you mean? Yeah.
No, go ahead. By all means. I've lost control of the show. Just do whatever you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Judith makes a point that 50 people showed up. Well, that's not a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree. It was actually 60, but I thought the same thing. 60. These are 60 people who are affected. It's in my own backyard. And the whole idea of climate is that it's global. And we're not even connecting with people in the nearby county or city, much less people in other countries that have to band together. And that's the real problem. That's why individual action and grassroots is not enough. You need governmental. You need the Paris Accord.
Well, it doesn't hurt.
You need systemic
Let me just say that I don't want to sound as though we're belittling the efforts of 50 people who decided on a cold day.
Very cold.
They could have been doing something else, showing up at a town hall meeting or in another venue to voice their concerns. You know, the reality is you have less than 60 people on social media who managed to create a flood of information. And, you know, you have elected officials who sit there and say, you know how many emails I got on this today? And it's like, no, it's really like four people. I still love the fact that people are showing up to town hall meetings, you know, and educating others and bringing these issues to the attention of elected officials.
Look, I was out in the cold marching for impeachment the other day, and there were a few hundred when there should have been 1,000. And the biggest demonstrations in the world were held to stop the war in Iraq. They got very little attention and none from government. So it's great to have grassroots, but we have a disconnect. It's not like the 60s where you have a big movement and then there's a reaction. I'm not seeing it now. And people get discouraged by that. You need more than just people showing up at a meeting or marching on the streets.
Over a million pink hats in Washington, D.C.
And what did it get us? I mean, we're still going. I agree. I was one of those 1 million. But I'm not sure that it's not as effective as one person in Congress passing a bill.
You still
that
have
makes
the hat?
Difference.
Well,
yes,
it leads to that. The grassroots organizing leads to an Antonio Delgado getting elected and feeling secure to vote for impeachment. You know, John Faso would have never voted for impeachment. So I think it does translate into who
Palin, Faso. What else are you going to hit me with today?
Spiro Agnew?
It does lead to change.
All right. This is from John. For the love of goodness, recognize people of color as a subject heading. Alan Andrew Yang didn't portray himself as a person of color. He is one. Please take note of what an obvious and regrettable gaffe this is. Love the show.
Well, I don't think that's fair. First of all, I did mention that he was a person of color. And I said so this morning in my commentary. I said so again. But he's not black, and he's not Hispanic, and that's a big difference.
Well, and I agree with you to some extent here, Alan. I think what you don't have a person there who's on that stage reflecting, you know, those issues that certain communities, only if you are familiar with that community or coming from that community, could articulate. So to that point, I think Yang was fair in raising the issue. I just don't know where he was going with it.
This one is from Bill in Kinderhook. Last night's debate was a great improvement over the carnival-like atmosphere of previous cable news events that more closely resembled WWF matches. Thanks to PBS and Politico for providing serious journalists and not celebrity talking heads. And that's from Bill in Kinderhook.
Except for the rotating backdrop.
Yeah, that was a little disconcerting. Yeah.
What was that?
I think it was hypnotism, right? It's Bernie saying, vote for me, vote for me. This is from Mike in Saratoga. Happy Friday, panel. Well, sort of. Please explain why you do not think this blue-collar roots pairing cannot beat Trump. Why can't Biden Klobuchar beat Trump? Dems have both coasts. I believe these two could bring in the Rust Belt and secure a win. Can you imagine Klobuchar debating Pence? And
that's she had a good night last night. She was declared the winner in many of the newspapers who did ratings of the candidates.
I'm going to say this about Amy Klobuchar. When she first announced her candidacy, I scratched my head and
said,
asked
who?
Why.
Yeah.
She has come on and has grown on me. The more I see her,
she's impressive.
The more I like her.
I'm surprised that it took this long for populist movements to arise worldwide. And if you look at what's happening with Brexit in England, what's happening in Eastern Europe, what's happening in the United States, this populist movement has economic roots, like all populist movements have going back to the 19th century. And that is, people feel their opportunities limited, their wages have stagnated. So the person who wrote the letter was absolutely correct in that it's building a blue-collar coalition. And Trump put forth a platform. He hasn't executed it, but that's what made him so successful on the debate stage against Hillary Clinton and ultimately winning the 2016 election. That populism is what the Democrats need, and there needs to be a strong appeal with real programs that can, one, energize the blue-collar base, but also, two, deliver on meaningful economic policies, whether it's a higher – forget about the minimum wage. We should shift the discussion to a living wage. Mm. We should talk about guaranteed employment. We should be talking about an expanded social safety net. We should be talking about all of these things. And it's 2020 – you know, 2020 is coming up, and now Democrats are just starting to talk about it.
The con man in chief created a word. He put two words together that I've never heard of in my life. Blue-collar billionaire.
Yeah.
He literally went all over the central United States, the Rust Belt, talking about a blue-collar billionaire and values. And people
bought it up.
Bought in on it.
Because they vote on their aspirations.
You vote on your aspirations. We have organized labor, and you see people with MAGA hats at organized labor.
Yeah.
You know,
crazy
events, and you're like, what do you, are you connecting?
I still remember one of his most effective speech. Well, not that effective because Trump won, but Obama getting up saying, I get it. You know, you want someone to speak for you. But this guy, really? That's what he said. And
yeah, remember,
he was right.
I think in the last election, there were so many voters who just wanted change at any cost. They were tired of the Clintons. I don't think we have that in play here. I think people are, many independent voters are panicked about what Trump has done to this country, and more people are just fatigued. They're just tired of the, you know, it was Jeb Bush who said it was going to be the chaos presidency, and he's right. And I think they don't need to be super excited, but they've got to show up in November. And I think voters always
want change. That's why Obama got in. That was his campaign promise. And the same true. We have those Democrats on stage last night all had plans. Every one of them, everyone was way more qualified. Right.
Yes.
And yet, aren't we all saying, did we see a president? Did we see someone there who could beat Trump?
But don't you think the reason that Trump won is that he's a negative bully? I mean, Fred, let's face it. He appealed to that dark side of all of us.
He appealed to destroying those who wish to destroy a structure, a way of doing business,
draining the swamp
in our country. That's what his appeal was. Now, I will say that I think what people are starving for is some moderation, some stability. They want someone who's going to come in and figure out ways of helping improve their lives. That's why I have a lot of concern over Warren's candidacy, because I think that she scares people.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break
here. Not stability at all. Mm-hmm. Right,
so. Rosemary Armeo is here. Judah Think, David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Alan Shartok, and you at panel@wamc.org. You know you have a pretty energized panel when we have gotten through exactly two letters or two email correspondence, as Ira would have me say it. And I'll tell you what, we will get to more of your letters. We have much more to discuss. We'll take a break for news.
Support for WAMC comes from C&H Architects, working with residential clients throughout the Berkshires and Hudson Valley to create a legacy of sustainable architecture designed for the next 100 years. CNHArchitects.com. South Egremont Spirit Shop, located in the southwest corner of the Berkshires, specializing in curated small production wines and regional handcrafted spirits and beer, real wine for the people. SouthEgremontSpirits.com. And Vermont Coffee Company, organic coffee in the brown paper bag, available at local grocers. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3 Remsen Utica, WAMK HD 90.9 Kingston, WOSR HD 91.7 Middletown, WCEL HD 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN HD 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC HD 103.9 Ticonderoga, WAMQ HD 105.1 Great Barrington, WWES HD 88.9 Mount Kisco, WANZ HD 90.1 Stamford, WANR 88.5 Brewster, WAMC AM 1400 Albany.
Support for WAMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years. QFCC.com. Avila, an independent retirement community, Albany, New York, offering one and two bedroom residences, a maintenance-free lifestyle, and more in a private and secure campus setting. AvilaRetirementCommunity.com. Northshire Bookstore, an independent, family-owned community bookseller working to encourage the wonder of reading with an entire floor dedicated to kids. Northshire.com.
This is WAMC News. I'm Ian Pickus. In the headlines, President Donald Trump is blasting a prominent Christian magazine that published an editorial arguing he should be removed from office. Trump tweeted this morning that Christianity Today is a far-left publication which has been doing poorly. In the editorial, the magazine's editor-in-chief writes that Democrats have had it out for Trump from day one, but that the facts in this instance are unambiguous. Trump attempted to use his political power to coerce a foreign leader to harass and discredit one of the president's political opponents. He says that's not only a violation of the Constitution, but profoundly immoral. Police in India are banning public gathering in parts of New Delhi and other cities for a third day and have cut internet services to try to stop growing protests against a new citizenship law and the protests have left 11 people dead and more than 4,000 others detained. Opponents say the law threatens India's secular democracy in favor of a Hindu state. The Orange County Legislature is calling for New York State to either amend or delay implementation of the bail reform and discovery reform laws set to take effect January 1st. Hudson Valley correspondent Hank Gross reports.
The new discovery law will require law enforcement to produce all evidence in 15 days. a time frame that police and district attorneys say is virtually impossible. That cannot be accomplished, says legislature chairman Stephen Brescia, who said the ramifications of the law were not taken into consideration.
Most, if not all of us, agree that there needs to be bail reform, but not in the haphazard fashion that this was handed down. I mean, it's you know, we've had to add in the 2020 budget four ADAs, and the district attorney wanted triple that amount. The sheriff's office has told us what the impacts are going to be there. The probation, we put money in contingency for the impacts that are forthcoming.
Legislator Joel Sierra cast the sole vote against the memorializing resolution. He said the reforms adopted in Albany are a good first step, and then modifications could come later. For WAMC in the Hudson Valley, I'm Hank Gross.
The families of seven victims of the fatal 2018 Schoharie limousine crash have filed two new lawsuits citing negligence. One suit targets the limo company and associated individuals, as well as a repair shop that worked on the stretch SUV limo. The other lawsuit names New York's Department of Transportation. 20 people were killed in the October 6, 2018 crash at the intersection of State Routes 30 and 30A. Nauman Hussein, the operator of Prestige Limousine, faces 20 counts of criminally negligent homicide and manslaughter. The Department of Transportation says it does not comment on pending litigation. Right now on Wall Street, the Dow's up 103 points, 28,480. The NASDAQ up 19 points, 8,906. And the S&P 500 is up 12 points to 3,218. Weather forecast from News Channel 13 meteorologist Paul Caiano. Mostly sunny but cold today with highs in the lower 20s. A clear night tonight, lows in the single digits. And for Saturday, a mix of sun and clouds, highs only getting into the upper 20s. 1 degree and cloudy right now, Lake Placid, New York. Rutland, sunny skies and 10. Litchfield, Connecticut, sunny, 19 degrees. Springfield, sunny skies and 19. And there's more WAMC news coming up at 11:06.
Support for WAMC comes from the Double H Ranch, providing year-round outdoor Adirondack adventures for children with serious illness, doubleHranch.org. Neller Insurance, Copaic, Valencia, New Lebanon, Chatham, family-owned, insuring homes, autos, farms, businesses, and lives, supporting public radio in the Hudson Valley, Berkshires, and Northwest Connecticut, knellerins.com. Lori Ilvesacker, Coldwell Banker, Village Green Realty, Broker, Associate, Woodstock, supporting public radio in the Hudson Valley community, best wishes for the holiday season, 845-901-6129. Del Mar Farmers Market, 332 Kenwood Avenue. Local and organic farm products, holiday gifts, truffles, baked goods, now at Bethlehem Middle School cafeteria, Saturdays from 9 to 1, delmarmarket.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Friday morning. 10:05 is the time. It's the Roundtable panel here. David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Ink, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, and of course you. This one came in from Michelle. Michelle writes, my prediction for 2020, no matter who the Democratic candidate is, Trump will not debate them. He will use his outsider persona and say that he doesn't have to debate because he's the president. His supporters will love this as a stick in the eye to the system. It also gets him off the hook for a potential poor performance. He'll stick to Twitter as his debate forum, and that's from Michelle Allen.
The other side of that, of course, is that this is a guy who believes whatever he does is right and effective. And he believes he won the presidency the last time. By doing exactly that, by bullying Hillary. Nobody will ever forget his getting up and walking around her.
But I think he's so insecure. Deep down, he thinks he didn't win. And that's why when he pressured the president of Ukraine, it was not just to investigate Hunter Biden, but also the crowdsource and the last election results. He knows
but
he's
Judith,
really
he did win. He won.
I know, but I think he doesn't think he did.
Well, no, he didn't win the popular vote. We know that. We know that. But he did win the election the old way. And people tend, there's a lot of political science data on this, tend to replicate their successes over and over and over again, even if they're going to fail the second time.
Or in the case of my career, I replicate my failures again and again and again. But
oh, come on. It's so unnecessary for you to say, well, we all know and appreciate everything you've
Silence.
Done.
You are a star.
We're moving on.
Stars.
Everyone, everyone just shut it. Here we go. This is from Mark. Did anyone notice when Biden was asked if he supported reparations, he dodged the question? I noticed that.
Well, I noticed it. Look, it's a very difficult thing. You want to win white middle class votes. You know, reparations happen to be justified in many people's minds. You know, he knows it's a minefield and he doesn't want to go there. That's why he did what he did. He wants to be president.
Anybody else?
No, there are words in this culture that has been whose meaning, I mean, people don't quite understand what reparations, what it truly means. They don't even understand the period of Reconstruction. If you were to ask 9, 10 people about what was Reconstruction, when did it start, what was its intent, they wouldn't, I would say probably 8 people wouldn't be able to tell you what that is. So for politically charged words, I'd steer away from that as well. But there are other ways to articulate, you know, fiscal policies that uplift communities that have traditionally been ignored.
All right. This is from Marty. Marty, subject heading Bernie. Marty met Bernie. A few statements by the panelists need to be clarified. Bernie does not have talking points. He speaks the truth and was speaking it long before any other candidate. His answer to the race question was legitimate and addressed the question. He explained how addressing climate change is important for poor people because they will be the ones most affected by it. Is this false? Please stop looking for reasons to criticize him. Let's go to Rosemary.
Yes, I want this one.
All right.
Bernie, more than any other person up there, and Elizabeth would be second, stuck to talking points. No matter what the questions are, he goes back to his main points, which we have heard from 2016. Not to say that they're unimportant points, but he absolutely has them. It's inequality. It's free college tuition. You know them as well
as
I do.
Universal health care.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing disparaging about saying someone used talking points. That means they're on message and they want to get their major points through.
I think it's semantic because it's a platform and he keeps on going back to what his platform is. And by repeating this, they probably come across as sounding like talking points. But it's a platform that he has.
Well, again, there's an articulation issue. I think if you watch Meet the Press just about every Sunday, what you have is a Republican politician that comes on. When they're asked substantive questions, they just spout the same Republican talking points that you could have watched on Fox, that you could have watched on CNN by another Republican talking head. I do think there is an art to, you know, articulating your platform without necessarily appearing as though you are just engaged in repeating talking points.
You have to tell the story, but just from a human perspective, these candidates are out there, you know, sometimes 4, 5, 6 times a day giving the same speech. I heard Senator Klobuchar interviewed this morning. She's up at 5 a.m. in California doing a round of interviews. Then she's heading to Iowa to visit 26 counties. I don't know how they do it. I mean, it is so physically and mentally demanding to campaign. Trump does not do it that way. Trump does a couple rallies with supporters that bathe him in adulation. But these Democrats are out there working hard.
Well, ambition is a good driver, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one's from Mike in Hinsdale. What's your perspective on Duvall? Has that already evaporated? Seems like it might have.
Oh, I that's forgot from Mike. About him.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean,
is he still in?
There are people that are running that we don't know about, that we don't hear about.
All right, well, this is a good question. Now, as I recall, and maybe I have my memory is cloudy here, but in the 2016 race for the GOP nomination, there were like, what, 20 or whatever?
At least.
Didn't they have a popular person's table, and then the next day they had a kid's table.
Yeah.
And why didn't they not do that here? In other words, there are several candidates who got no, regardless of whether it was the prime slot or not, got no airtime on a debate stage last night.
Like Cory Booker?
Yeah.
Well,
or Deval Patrick or Bloomberg or anybody else?
Because Bloomberg doesn't want to participate in the debates. But I think it's because the Democratic Party has rules to get on the stage. You have to be at a certain level with polling.
Funding.
You have to fund in a certain number of states.
I understand, but are those rules Are they fair?
Are they fair?
They're absolutely not fair, and there's it's even more ironic that it's coming from, you know, the Democratic Party that talks about wealth redistribution and issues like that. Considering the fact that you had a very qualified candidate in one Kamala Harris that I was personally really hoping would go far into this race, but a person who also added a lot to the conversation. Cory Booker, I think, as a politician, he's having his finest moments. Mm-hmm. And the broader audience of the United States is not, you know, picking up on a lot of things that he's saying. And quite honestly,
how come?
Well, because it's money.
Doesn't have enough money.
Money. So if we're admitting that we're living in a society that treats people differently based on how they look, how then can we create a format where you're looking to appeal to the electorate where income and the ability to raise money is one of those issues?
It's Bernie has the ability to raise money, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways.
Yeah, right. Bernie has the ability to, he just doesn't look like Cory or Kamala, and I think Cory and Kamala have something in common.
I don't like the system. I've been railing against 20 people on a stage from the beginning, but it didn't come from lack of looking for a process that would work. I mean, the DNC has a lot of debates. They have this very elaborate formula that involved both money and popularity and outreach. They tried. It didn't work. Is there a system that works? I mean, we're bashing it, but
what would
be better?
What Ray identified, I think, is better, which is you have two debates on two consecutive nights, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the kids' table because you don't want people to ignore the second night, but you can do, you know, you do a draw names and, you know, six people on one night, six people the next night.
Yeah, that's like having an opening band that nobody wants to see.
Yeah.
But you could seed it with three of the top seeds, three of the bottom seeds both nights.
Are you kidding me? You're right.
Sponsored by WAMC. Let us take it over.
There are enough channels on anyone's television where you can actually watch a plant grow.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, what channel
is
that?
And you mean to tell me you can't find the airtime to put as many people that want to talk about improving our country and running for office?
But we've had that. We have the CNN town hall debates and they've taken specific issues and all the candidates have shown up. If you want to see our candidates, the Democratic candidates talking, you have the opportunity to do right. So. That's not the issue. It's that no one's caring. There's too many.
But it's not just that it's too many. I think it goes so much deeper. I think people are tuning out of politics.
Yes.
Because they're so disgusted.
Can you blame them?
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they've ever turned in.
Yeah. Well, it's never. I don't think it's ever been.
I think people have tuned in. I think that when, you know, I'll put it to you this way. When Americans on Sunday are you know, eating chicken wings and watching professional football, and all of a sudden you're able to get people arguing about not who's the best team, but who's kneeling and for what cause, and someone can politicize that, I think that the venom of politics is in the bloodstream of our country in so many ways that before we just it didn't exist.
But you bring up a great analogy when you talk about sports. Don't you think, and I know I'm not the first to say this, that we have now, it has become sports. We have, I don't care what happens as long as my team wins.
That's it. Yeah. That is it.
That's a scary prospect.
It's had terrible consequences on both sides because I can't see how, look, I've watched these impeachment hearings, right? And again, I love my Southern brothers and sisters, man, but I can't deal with that man's accent anymore, barking like Collins. A dog chasing after a bumper, right?
Yeah. But, he's a minister.
But how is it that any one of these people office. Could ever sit back and talk about the Constitution ever again?
Yeah.
How could they possibly? I mean, we talked about it before, the war hawks. How do you justify pulling out of Syria? If you're a fiscal hawk, how do you justify the tax breaks? The Republican Party has become untethered to any principle that it's had over the course of the last...
I totally disagree. Okay. The Republican Party has had really one main platform since the early 1970s, and that has been to redistribute income and wealth from the middle class and upper middle class to the top 1%. That's been their goal.
That's worked.
And they've had talking points, and there's like two of them: deregulation and tax cuts. And it's worked remarkably. So when the previous writer was talking about Bernie's talking points, that's exactly what the Democratic Party needs. It needs to stop talking about identity politics and all of these things that are wedge issues, and have one or two talking points and put all of your money behind it. And it's going to take 10 or 20 years. It took 15 years before you actually started to see the implementation of those Republican policies with the election of Reagan. That's a lot of groundwork and a lot of money and a lot of organization that went into bringing those ideas to a reality.
That's fascinating.
And if the Democratic Party doesn't do that, then we're stuck with the Republican platform from now until the economy collapses.
Well, we've had 16 years of Democratic presidents since Reagan.
And look how far they've shifted to the right. Clinton's welfare reform, Obama's, the Affordable Care Act was proposed by the Heritage Foundation. It was a right-wing think tank healthcare proposal.
It's so true. And this is one of the most frustrating things about the Democratic Party, which I am a loyal member, is watching the Democratic Party being beaten into submission where we believe we have to adopt values that truly are not ours, right? We saw that with the Clinton's welfare reform, right? And at a time when we needed more people to stand up and full-throated endorsement of access to health care, you know, people just kind of shied away, backed off. Once it was done, Pelosi lost. The political capital that the president had was lost because you had Democrats whose knees were shaking beneath their desks.
And a lot of that is due to big money in politics and losing Citizens United. And I think the permanent government or the special interest lobbyists that roam the halls of Washington, they just did the budget. You know that budget is filled with secret clauses that fund massive amounts of money to bad things while food stamps are being cut for millions of Americans.
Exactly. And this surprise medical bill ban that they were, you know, drafting, all of a sudden that gets tanked. And there was a lot of money and energy put into tanking that.
This one is from Brandon, and this one is right for the father of hotnomics. Brandon writes, at one point Bernie noted that the average earning in the country is $60,000 a year. If the top earning 1% is removed, what is the average? 60 seems high.
Okay, so I don't know if Bernie said average or median. There's a big difference. So the median income is the income at which 50% of the population is wealthier than you and 50% is poorer than you. The median is unaffected by outliers at the top. So knowing what I know about Bernie's platform, he was talking about the median, and it's about $65,000 a year adjusted for inflation. If you include the average income is pulled up by the billionaires, so it's going to be substantially higher. So I guarantee Bernie's number was referring to the median.
Okay. Well, thank you for that one.
Who lives in the wine cave on that economic?
I'll tell you what, man, for real. I read that, man, for real. This thing had me all twisted. I'm like, people who are so wealthy now need to find new ways of spending their money.
They have a wine cave.
A wine cave. Two words I never thought I'd ever hear together.
They actually have them in many places. France has them naturally, caves. Yeah. I've done research on this because that was a highlight of the debate to me.
Little known fact.
He went to Hall Winery in Napa Valley.
It's a huge
room with fantastic furniture and a crystal chandelier with like a bazillion crystal.
Yeah, see, now I have a Narragansett beer.
There you go.
There we go.
Right? Well, little known fact, Alan actually has a wine cave in Great Barrington. Is that not true, sir?
That is not true.
That is not true?
We have edibles in Great Barrington.
No, that is not true. We have a
edible cave.
We have a thing up there, and we put the wine bottles so that they're facing down, probably wrong.
Fair enough.
You know, up there, and we don't have it because we don't drink it for the most part.
Alan has a Cristal cave.
I bet he does. That's right. This one is from Beverly. No debate required. Beverly writes, Dems do not dignify this president with a Biden POTUS debate and entertainment platform. Trump will no doubt command with his rude, insulting responses.
I agree.
Say no to a debate.
I agree.
I say that putting Biden in that this early is a bit premature.
Absolutely not. The one thing, look, the disadvantage that I think all Democrats right now in not only in the Senate but also in the House are up against is the fact that You're talking about a party that no longer subscribes to decency.
Or sanity.
You have to be decent. You have to be decent in the way that you engage with other people. Yeah. And
it's what we teach our kids.
Well, it's what we teach our kids. But you're, I mean, look at Louis Gohmert, man. I mean, Louis Gohmert looked like, he looks like a cat that you've stepped on his tail. That's, this man is leaping around. He's just, is arrogant. Look at the other guy from Ohio, Jim Jordan.
Jim Jordan.
You know, put on a jacket, you know, drink less caffeine, and be civil. You have people that are on the mic shouting, not engaging in any substantive discussions about what's happening in the country. It's all just, you're taking these rabid chihuahuas and you're throwing them in front
but
of
David,
microphones.
You know why? It's, they're playing to the audience of one. They want the Fox soundbite. The who's the minister from Georgia?
Collins.
A lot of what he, I blocked out his name. A lot Collins. Of what he was doing is because Trump wants him to run for the open Senate seat in Georgia.
In Georgia.
And the governor of Georgia is going with someone else.
That is not an audience of one, Judith. That's the one thing I disagree with you. It's, if Trump were the only one buying this, that'd be something. There are millions of Americans sucking that up.
Yeah, but wouldn't you agree they're playing to the Fox cameras?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Alan.
How many rabid chihuahuas are there?
There's quite a few.
I'm going to be laughing until tonight.
And then there's one rabbit. There's one rabbit cow, and that's Devin Nunes.
In the middle of the night, I'll be laughing about it.
All right, this one is from Paul and Kinderhook. That was a really nice point about the breadth of issues before Democrats. They can be distilled down to two things, though: fairness and justice. Try to find that in the Republican menu, and that's from Paul and Kinderhook.
So, Republicans, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, have a very different concept of fairness and justice. Mm-hmm. And that is, the strongest survive.
Yeah. Hammer and nail.
Now, Republicans have rigged the game so that, and or have stacked the deck so that certain people can't win and certain people mm-hmm. will almost certainly win. So,
if I can translate that for a minute, it's being born on second, thinking you hit a double.
Exactly. And if you go back, to economists like Milton Friedman, who Democrats love to disparage, if you actually read his writings, he's very consistent in his concept of what fairness is. And people would be surprised to know that he's a big advocate of government setting fair rules that give people equal opportunity that might lead to unequal outcomes. That's a perfectly acceptable concept of fairness. It's that modern Republicans have thwarted that so that we don't even provide equal opportunity. Mm-hmm. So if you don't start with equal opportunity, the inequality of outcomes are just guaranteed to persist. Mm-hmm.
This is from Christopher and Schoharie, subject heading Obama not endorsing Biden. Perhaps the reason why President Obama has neglected to endorse his former VP might be due to the fact that an endorsement from him would skew the primary in Biden's favor. I believe that Obama wants the best Democrat to be put forward against Trump, and having his thumb on the scales would prop Biden up, potentially to a greater degree than is warranted by his candidacy. Also, Obama might be waiting for the primary results so as not to put his money behind the wrong horse. And that is from Christopher in Schoharie.
Of course.
This is from Greg. Subject heading Bernie Sanders. Seems to me Bernie needs to put more emphasis on his early work for civil rights. Anybody?
It would certainly help him.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to know what people want to hear?
Yes.
How are you going to help me now? Don't talk to me about your credentials. I don't want to talk about your resume. What are you going to do for me right now?
I wonder if there's an opportunity for Bernie and Elizabeth Sanders to join forces.
Elizabeth Sanders?
I'm sorry, Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, Bernie Warren.
Well, that
are
would
you
be
talking
an
about
interesting
love,
marriage.
Or are you talking about...
Well, I would love to see that platform.
Yeah, one could run for president.
I'm sorry, this is
the
uncle and aunt's
president.
House you don't want to go visit.
Oh, I want to go
visit. I don't want to go see Uncle Bernie and Uncle... I'm going
to
be lectured.
Working to improve
my
the country.
Hair's too long. I've got... I'm wearing an earring. I don't want to be lectured.
I would like to see a Warren Sanders alliance.
Mm.
Me too.
And how does that?
I think Donald Trump would like to see that as well.
And I think they win against Trump.
Why do you think they would win?
I think
because individually they're not polling against him.
Doing well against Trump. They're behind Biden in primary, but when the polls on
Interesting. Alan, what do you think about that?
Warren and Biden do very well against Trump. I think they're speaking to everyone we've been talking about today, particularly Aaron.
Gonzo is polling well against the president.
Yeah, really. Alan, what do you think?
Well, these two people, both with seriously good sense of self and ego, are not about to drop out. Neither of them is about to drop out. That's for damn sure. So, I mean, you guys can have these sort of dreams and say, well, what if these two guys got together? They're not getting together. Forget about it.
I go back to what I said earlier this morning, and that is the whole debate, the whole presidential election is nothing more than theater. You can talk about platforms. That comes after the election. What a Sanders-Warren team could do is to combat Trump on his own terms. And to use an analogy we were talking about earlier, we moved from a highly scripted WWF style form of debate to just a bare knuckle UFC brawl.
Stop, it ain't going to happen.
No, but that name another Democrat that could go toe to toe bare knuckle brawl with Trump on a debate stage.
You mean other than Bernie?
Yeah,
Elizabeth Warren certainly could.
Oh, dear God.
She
could. No.
She,
I don't want to watch
look at what
that.
You do with the Wells Fargo and the banking.
Why not?
Did you see my
awesome.
Boy? Did you see my boy Mayor Pete last night? Did you see my boy Mayor Pete take it to Ms. Warren? Did you see that?
Actually, he had a great line about.
And he was all ready for it.
What was the line?
So what?
About you can't use a purity test that you cannot pass yourself.
Oh, I'm sure it was scripted, but it was well done.
It was scripted. I tell you what, everything that those people said yesterday was scripted. Everything.
Well, one final point before Alan dismisses this as a pipe dream.
And we also have to take a break.
Kamala Harris dropped out because she didn't have enough money to keep going. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have an amazing funding base from small donors.
That's true.
They can stay in till the end.
And young voters.
And excitement.
I think the question is going to be who's going to be the vice president. And Harris, to some degree, is still very much in the running, which may be why she dropped out.
You think Biden is going to take this?
Take what?
You said who is going to be the vice presidential candidate. So you assume then that Biden is going to be the nominee.
Harris.
Right.
Biden,
let's put
Harris.
It this way. Right now. Right now, I would assume that.
So
but that goes back to Judith. Why would a Warren Sanders, or the other way around, I'd like it that way, why would that ticket be better than a Biden Klobuchar?
Because I think it's more likely to win because it speaks to
progressive rather
voters.
Than moderate.
And
one woman,
independent voters particularly.
We only have 30 seconds here.
And one woman is of color.
The best candidates that Donald Trump could run against is Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren.
Why do you say that?
Because they have so much material that the right will just pour a ton
of money.
The
right is going to attack any Democrat.
Yes, absolutely. But there's just much more. There's just more material with those two.
As Alan would tell you, it's all about the Electoral College. And so I think that maybe David Soares is on to something there regarding
Wisconsin, Pennsylvania.
We have to take a break
Michigan,
here.
Ohio,
we'll pick it up on the other side of the news.
Bernie.
It's the roundtable panel.
Keep talking.
Yeah, I know you will. Just wait until the lights off. David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Ink, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok on the panel today. And you can write us at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will take a brief break for news, and we will be back, two and a half minutes or so. Woody Allen movie. It's 10:33 Friday morning.
Your life isn't a Woody Allen movie.
Boy, you got
friend.
That right. Judith Ink is here on the panel. Aaron Pasitti, David Soares, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok. It is the roundtable panel.
And that's the kind of soundtrack right there that you have playing in the background if your breakfast is awful.
Yeah.
It's like Broadway Ray Rose or something.
Oh, Broadway Danny Rose is one of my favorite sort
that's
of under
wonderful.
The radar comedies. This is from Barbara in Ulster County. Amy Klobuchar is one of the very few who has made substantial policy statements about long-term care and caregiver needs. That captures my interest and thanks. And that is from Barbara in Ulster County. Well, I thought she had a pretty good night last night.
She
would do herself, for her continuing to get exposure. I've watched her interviews you know, she's doing herself a favor by continuing to be out there and to get as, in front of as many cameras. I think the more people hear from her, the more people begin to like her.
She's gets back, done if she doesn't perform in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. this gets back to my point about not having all the candidates on the debate, because she mm-hmm. got, you know, she's doing all right, but she got on that stage. Some of these others who are also still there, they didn't get that camera shot last night.
If you go back to 2016, this particular president got more free and earned
right.
media
right.
than any candidate ever in the history of politics, okay? And it's the truth. It's a non-starter if you're not able to...
Yeah.
And there are many that blame the media for inflicting Donald Trump on us because they were so fascinated by his whole shtick.
And never questioned
him. Yeah, they covered him like wall to wall.
Well, there was a lot of questioning, but I mean, he was talked about every day on this panel. I mean,
Donald Trump is a one in a million. He is not something. It's what the way he was covered mm-hmm. will not be replicated by anybody
Good.
Else. And I would argue again. Why did that exposure help him rather than hurt him? Why could you not watch a rally and say, oh my God, he's awful, I would never vote for him? Why did it help him? It says a lot more about the society than
it does
about
say a lot
media.
More because he appealed to grievance and people yes. would rather yep. focus on yep. grievance
he's
the
Festivus
than the future.
Candidate. He just airs so many grievances.
The airing of the grievances.
You know, yeah. Right. How many times do you hear him say, I've been treated so badly?
Mm-hmm. All
he
the time.
Is the definition of Festivus.
You pointed yeah. something out a little bit earlier, Judith.
This is Judith.
I'm
sitting right next to you.
Particular president, this particular president, there is no such thing as bottom.
It's absolutely.
You know, I think he caught the world off guard, because usually when someone does something wrong, they try to do something to correct it.
Yeah, right.
This guy goes from doing something wrong to something worse. Yeah. Right? And the something worse takes your attention off of the things that he did wrong. But it never stops.
So it's like acupuncture.
Like this woman's
but with nails instead of needles.
This woman who just lost her husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, horrible. Just lost her husband.
Debbie Dingell for listeners.
This guy is on a stage, you know, going waxing poetically, you know, entertaining himself. And he says the worst thing.
And it just came to him naturally.
Yeah.
I don't think he, like, tried that line out in advance.
No.
It just came out. And the thing that worries me so much, not to freak people out, but the consistent thing with our president is it just when you think it can't get any worse, it does. And I'm really worried about the next few weeks, the next few months. He is so...
What about the next few years?
Well,
no, the next
yeah.
few, the next few weeks, and I think you're absolutely right. I've been saying this every time I have the opportunity. You got to watch for, you know, the decisions that are before a variety of different judiciaries and the steps that are being taken to deal with all of his other outstanding issues mm-hmm. and how those things
emoluments.
Are going to be impacting
taxes.
Well, we have South Korea saying, hold on for a Christmas present. Does that bother anybody?
You mean North Korea.
I mean, North Korea, sorry. Saying there's another missile in our future. And that is Trump. I mean, the other stuff, like the judiciary, that's McConnell is in charge of that. And there's some, not protection, but it's not his, his bailiwick.
No, when I'm talking about the judiciary, I'm talking just about the cases that are already alive. And the cases that are being decided,
right?
That you got to.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, you
okay,
got to
like
look for
taxes.
Yeah,
and,
you got to look for mm-hmm. all of those issues and how yep. that's going to
but
affect
taxes
him.
Taxes are yep. delayed until the spring, right? The recent
yeah.
court decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're heading into this joyous holiday season with a president who is just seething that he was impeached, and now he is spending a lot of time attacking Nancy Pelosi for not sending the papers over to the Senate. And it's just his Twitter feed on Christmas morning is going to be brutal.
You know, I've had to come in here from time to time defending the honor of one Nancy D'Alessandro Pelosi. And there's some people here who owe her an apology, and I would like to hear those apologies, because she is, if nothing else, just an incredibly brilliant political strategist. And the idea that you have this guy who's 6 foot five in the occupying the Oval Office, who claims to be a svelte 248 pounds, the fact that you have this guy who's a bully, who's a blowhard, and he is being taken to town every day by Nancy D'Alessandro Pelosi.
She is courageous. That's what she is. It's not only brilliant, but she's courageous. It takes a lot of courage to do what she's doing.
This one, direct to our political observer, Alan Chartok. This is from Carol. I think that part of Joe Biden's appeal is his lack of drama and the pushing of exciting new ideas. We see his experience. It feels dependable, and we want time to recover. The nation needs a rest. That's from Carol Allen.
Good letter.
That's all you got? You're a political observer?
She's right.
All right, this one's from Nicholas in Westfield. We'll give you another chance. I hear the poll numbers touted and the general support for Biden as the candidate who can defeat Trump. I do not support Biden's candidacy and do not see him as a strong opponent to the president. Why is it that people do not believe a candidate like Elizabeth Warren cannot defeat Trump? That's from Nicholas in Westfield. Now, political observer Alan Chartok, go.
Yeah. Well, you know, why is an interesting question. But it's different from is. The fact of the matter is that people don't see that. I like her. I think she's terrific. But you got to go with a winner. You got to get somebody who engenders confidence. That's why I love the last letter, because America is ready for a rest now.
So, Judith, Alan is then positing that Elizabeth Warren is not a winner. Over to you.
Oh, I think she very much is. I think she's accomplished a great deal. I think if she is running against Trump, she will win.
Aaron, you're raising your hand. Go ahead.
Boy, I'm sorry to hear Alan say that. America is not ready for a rest. We are ready for a movement in a very different direction. We don't want stability.
Well,
we don't want
the rest of the country.
We have to solve
climate change.
You
are people not concerned about climate change and student debt and stagnating incomes and rising income inequality and rising cost of health care?
Hey, it's Tom Jones.
I'll meet you on the Weehawken plane over that. Nobody's talked more about climate change than I have. Don't give me that garbage.
All right, hey now.
You're not running, are you? We're talking about Biden.
All right, everybody calm down. Go ahead, Alan.
I'm done.
All right, good. This one's from John Pelosi, the Republican gift that keeps on giving. Good morning, panel. I was hoping for something that would further drag out the impeachment. For the longer it has gone on, the worse the poll numbers are for Democrats. If you don't believe that, look at the latest Gallup and CNN poll. Lo and behold, Pelosi delivered by not releasing to the Senate. What a gift. Does the panel think this will not benefit Trump? Thanks, Nancy. And that's from John in Addison, Vermont.
What were the choices? I mean, if she gave in and set this stuff up and Mitch McConnell had his way and banged the gavel and said all in favor of impeachment and got the vote he wanted within an hour or 2 hours, they couldn't do that. She couldn't do it. She had something to play with. She did it.
The one thing that Nancy Pelosi knows is that the Senate, you know, the House that pretends to be, of higher esteem than the House of Commons, right? The Senate has to do what they do, but they have to have an air of legitimacy to it. And so what I can't believe is Mitch McConnell, who everyone blesses with incredible, political acumen, what I can't believe is the man goes on Fox and says, I'm talking to the White House.
We're coordinating.
Yeah. That was a big mistake. And Lindsey Graham says, oh, this is a sham. I'm like, no, you guys are the Senate. You have to create the appearance of legitimacy here. And what you've just done is you've undermined yourself. And Nancy Pelosi sees the blood in the water. She's going to delay dragging this thing out. It's going to be 2 weeks. Schumer now is coming on strong, talking about, calling witnesses.
Finally.
And using the Republican argument in the House, which was, we didn't hear from anyone with who had direct evidence. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, now the Democrats in the Senate will adopt those talking points. And the next 2 weeks, that's what we will hear.
And don't forget that she also has in her calculus what this is doing to Trump, that it's pushing him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that crazy behavior you're talking about, to leave him under a cloud with no way to say, I was exonerated, that's definitely pushing
Biden. I also want
to say nothing of the Senate. the Senate is in play here. We're talking about four votes. That's right. What we're talking
Mitt
about.
Mitt Romney, Lisa Murkowski, Cory Gardner, and Susan Collins. Everywhere they go over the next 2 weeks, they're going to be asked, what do you mean? No witnesses, no documents. And as of a few days ago, 64% of Republicans say that the White House staff should testify. 85% of Democrats say that they should.
And you're exactly right. The writer from Vermont. I don't know which polls you're watching. I know there was one, the Gallup poll just came out the other day.
Some people call it the best Republican poll ever.
There's another poll out there that says 71% of the people want to hear from witnesses.
And McConnell, I mean, nothing sums up the state of the current Republican Party better than McConnell saying, why would we bring forth witnesses that might convict
right.
Trump?
Right.
Mm-hmm. How's that a fair trial?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but I think you guys all miss my point. My point here is that the Senate is up for grabs.
Right.
It's not that on an issue or the impeachment. It's up for grabs. You could have a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and that would be a powerful antidote.
Didn't the Republicans pick up a couple of seats in the midterms?
In
the 2018?
Senate, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and there was a reason for that, Ray, and that was that these were non-defensible seats for the Democrats.
Yeah.
But
that's why.
For which?
But now, this year, it's not that way. Okay. This year, the Democrats have the advantage.
What Schumer is trying to do, remember, only requires 51 votes, yeah. not mm-hmm. the 60. So mm-hmm. all 47 Democrats in the Senate say they support having witnesses and documents. Mm. So he only needs to pick up four Republicans. And to Alan's point, a Cory Gardner, not always a profile in courage, but he is in a tight reelection race
exactly.
in Colorado. So you may see some pressure on him. And what Schumer is going to require is specific floor votes on specific witnesses.
This sign means we have 30 seconds in TV.
I'm done.
I just want to say that for the other senators that currently may be thinking about going with Trump and doing this thing rather quickly, their position continues to grow harder every day because you have Giuliani that's out there Yay. Continuing to Yay. Do strange and strange things.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Thanks to the panel today, David Soares, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Henke, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. Thank you for listening. Thank you for great email help. And I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody. There's more roundtable ahead.